Welcome to the Divided Kingdom. This is Elizabeth Cuppett.
And Lou Cavalli.
And we're coming to you on great WWCR 4.840 megahertz. And, of course, you can hear us at WWCR.com as well. Well, we hope to have an important guest tonight, Lou.
Yes, we're hoping Dr. Stan Monteith will be with us.
And when we look around, it looks like the war climate. The war drums are heating up everywhere, not just Afghanistan. When we note that the leaders of the United States and Britain together, President Barack Obama and Britain's Prime Minister David Cameron, participating in a joint news conference, they're saying that the U.S. and the U.K., Lou, remain committed to the Afghan mission. So it doesn't look as though we will get out of there till 2014. But at the same time, what's going on with this CONI resolution in and Africa? You know, we reported some time back on this program that some troops, a very small article in a newspaper where you almost didn't see it, but it did reach the light of day somewhat, that these special troops were being sent into Africa. Well, there are a lot of resources to be, shall we say, guarded there.
Oh, yes. Africa is a huge continent with many natural resources, resources of all kinds. So it's no wonder that the New World Order might want to poke its head in there.
Probably oil, gas, diamonds,
yes.
Who knows what minerals. And at the same time, we have the Illuminati plan specter always hanging over us of the Third World War. Those of you who have never heard Dr. Stanley Monteith, give the real truth about the wars of the past and his prognosis for the future. I believe that he is deeply concerned. When we have these generals and our Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, coming to Congress and informing them that they will answer to NATO for the wars, that Congress is irrelevant. Scholars like Bruce Fine, great constitutional scholar, these scholars are just appalled. They are up in arms, as well they should be. Every American ought to know about this and ought to be complaining. Actually, we've heard that some senators were going to introduce some resolutions to start impeachment. So we'll have to watch this situation, and surely, surely these generals will back off, because in any other state, in any other time, this would have been high treason, would it not?
Oh, I think so, and I think there has been a resolution advanced in the House of Representatives for impeachment of Obama, based upon this very idea that he is selling away the country.
Well, Congress has certain powers, and they are to approve the wars, not NATO, not the UN. But we hope tonight that we will get to have you hear quite a bit from Dr. Stanley Monteith. Those of you who have never tuned in should go visit RadioLiberty.com. You'll find a lot of interesting information, important health information as well. Statin drugs, what are their dangers? Fluoride in the water, what is the danger? Genetically modified foods, so many dangers there. Those are just some of the topics covered in addition to the political topics. And his phone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Getting back to this war issue, Lou, there was an AP article March 13th that headlined, U.S. official, suspect in Afghan killing suffered head injury. You know, many times we think about all of these patsies in time past, such as Oswald, maybe Sirhan Sirhan, many people who took the rap when others were doing state-sponsored terrorism, actually Timothy McVeigh. Well, all of these people we think might be Manchurian candidates, but sometimes there are other reasons. This latest thing at the University of Maryland, in which they preempted something from a student, he was an honor student, Lou, but it looked like there were rumblings of trouble for some time with him talking to his friends and so forth and so on. So that probably is an isolated case, someone with a mental illness. But some of these things do make us wonder quite a bit. So anyway, this article said in the AP that the suspect was involved in a vehicle accident in Iraq during a recent tour of duty and suffered a head injury. And this U.S. official spoke on condition of anonymity because the matter is under investigation. And according to the AP article, the vehicle accident was not a combat-related event. There was no available indication about the extent of the injury or whether his injury could be linked to any abnormal behavior afterward. And two other U.S. officials, according to this AP article, again, they wanted to remain anonymous. They said the suspect had been trained as a sniper. And this attack on Sunday in southern Kandahar province unfolded in two villages near a U.S. base. Villager Mohammed Zahir recounted how an American soldier burst into his home in the middle of the night, searched the rooms, then dropped to a knee and shot his father in the thigh as he emerged from the bedroom. He was not holding anything, not even a cup of tea, Zahir said. Well, this anti-Americanism that is boiling over is only going to be increased after last month. Remember, Lou, the U.S. troops burning the Korans? And then there was a video of Marines urinating on alleged Taliban corpses. That was posted on the Internet in January. Dr. Stanley Monteith has a phrase, the best enemy money can buy. Are we building up different enemies so that we can fight them? And then out of the final chaos will come the world government or the new world order. You and I see an awful lot of stuff that's heading toward tyranny here in Maryland. We've been talking ad nauseum about the poor watermen who last year found all of the GPS trackers on their boats. And we talked to a waterman whose boat had not been out on the water for 3 years, listeners. He found a GPS tracker. Now, supposedly, when they were collared about this, the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources head, said they had gotten the proper warrants. But the state legislators insisted, show us the warrants. Show us the warrants. But where's the beef? No, no, we won't see the warrants. We just are told the warrants were there. Now, we move to that huge Chesapeake Bay Bridge over which millions of people go to Ocean City every year. Well, in the dark of night, they passed the Easy Pass law. Okay? Then in the dark of night, rather quickly, they upped the toll. From Lou was commuting for the last 13 years over this particular bridge, and he was paying $2.50. Now he would be paying $4. And I think in a year or two it will be $7. So a phenomenal increase. And we've suspected all along, because the Easy Pass people get a pass, they don't pay as much. We've suspected this is a form of coercion. Just like we're being coerced to give up our cash and proceed to the cashless society, these people are being urged to go on Easy Pass. And what was the update on that, Lou?
Well, what I heard was that the Easy Pass will become compulsory, and the only way to pay to get over all these bridges and tunnels in Maryland. Now, there are two tunnels in Baltimore City. They're under the Baltimore Harbor, and there are a number of bridges throughout the state, and so all of these will become electronic. So I guess if you don't have the Easy Pass, you go on the old side roads. I guess that's all it amounts to.
Excuse me, your guest on the line.
Wonderful. Well, when we talk about this type of tyranny here within our own country, it is important to wonder why these drones, these 30,000 drones, are going to be flying over traffic for the next 10 years. We do fear that sometime these wars will be brought home. The patriotic Americans, the ones who finally wake up when the patriotic Americans tell them, and they finally realize we are losing our freedoms because of these suspect wars, then we will have another problem. We will certainly need our Savior, Lord Jesus Christ. And before we bring Dr. Stan up, he's going to tell you so much tonight about the history of these wars and the truth about them and what he perceives might be in the offing coming. And we've asked him to also give you some personal warnings, what he thinks you should do to prepare. We must give a short tribute tonight to our late friend Arthur Burnclough. And those of you who used to call in when we were on the network know that he was a very strong veterans advocate, and he helped very much his organization, Veterans for Constitutional Law, to uncover the truth about companies like Prudential, who were keeping the survivors' benefits from the surviving families of our killed veterans. He did a great deal. He made inroads, he and his organization, to be able to give soldiers the ability to go into our normal trial system for trials. All of this he did. And I had the great pleasure of talking to him a few months back again about our Savior, Jesus Christ. He had never accepted him. And I heard him tell me, yes, I did now. I said, I hope you didn't do it for me. He said, no, I did it for me. And listeners, after his death, he died of a massive heart attack. I believe that a miracle occurred. His wife told me, quote, that I saw him, and in death, he looked 20 years younger. He looked like when I married him when he was 58, 20 years ago. And she said all the lines were removed from his face and his hands, and he looked totally at peace. Yes, we have an advocate, and in this hell we're living in, Lou and I would not be able to come on this radio without God's protection and intervention, and without true Christian friends like our mentor. He is a genuine Christian man. He's been a wonderful, faithful friend to us, and he's been a friend to all of you. And I urge you again, before we bring him up, to please visit RadioLiberty.com. Please call 1-800-544-8927. You would like to receive a sample newsletter, I am sure. We wouldn't want to be without his monthly newsletter. He's been so gracious to us. And without further ado, what are these wars of the past? What are the wars of the present? And what do you see for the coming near future? Welcome to the program, Dr. Stanley Montes.
It's good to be with you. Thank you so much for having me as a guest this evening.
We're so glad, aren't we, Lou?
Yes.
Well, you know, if we want to go into the background of the wars, it's so vitally important that people understand all of the wars are contrived. First of all, we'll start with the Spanish-American War. That was 1898, and of course, it was planned. The whole idea was America had a manifest destiny. That was the slogan used at the time. And William Randolph Hearst, who was the media mongol at the time, had newspapers in all the major cities, wrote a letter to a photographer before the war began, telling him he was to go down and get pictures of the war. And the quotation, you'll find it in the book of quotations, you supply the pictures and I will supply the war. And of course, it was just constant agitation in the newspapers. At that time, we didn't have radio or television, but the papers were really what influenced people's thoughts, and all the agitation against the Spanish and the Spanish king, and as the heightened tension between the United States and Spain, for some reason, the Department of Navy took the battleship Maine and brought it into Havana Harbor, controlled by the Spanish. And that night, why, of course, there's a great explosion. The boat goes down. 60 or 80 Americans are killed. They blame it on the Spanish. They say they used a landmine to sink our ship, and it was a lie. But they used that then to plunge us into the Spanish-American War, where we lost about 5,000 men, but we defeated the Spanish and began America on the way towards empire. Now, years later...
And Dr. Stan, may I interject?
Yes.
I believe it was that war that so incensed Mark Twain. Do you recall? I believe that he was very, very upset with the politics of America, and I believe it was that war.
With every justification, because it was totally unnecessary. Years later, when they raised the battleship Maine, they found the explosion wasn't from a Spanish mine. It occurred from within. Something exploded on the battleship. I suspect it was all contrived. They needed an excuse for the war, and they got one. But what we never talk about is the Philippine-American War. I dare say that there's not probably one person in 1,000 in the audience that ever heard about the Philippine-American War, which fought from about 1901 to about 1905, where we killed between 200,000 and 2 million Filipinos. The American soldiers are a very efficient killing machines. They went over, they killed anybody who resisted to America replacing Spain as the imperial force that ruled the Filipinos. They just wanted to be free. A lot of the people died of the diseases. We destroyed the infrastructure of society. But somewhere between 200,000 and 2 million Filipinos died in the Philippine-American War. And I dare say most of your listeners have never heard of it, although you can go, fortunately we have the Internet, and you can go up on the Internet and read about the Philippine-American War. But that started America on the march to world government. Now, certainly we know that the plans for the world wars were made long beforehand. We know from, if you read Cindy Bertrand Russell's autobiography, and you get the exact quotation and the pages from his biography, three-volume biography, and my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, but Cindy Bertrand Russell belonged to a little dinner club. It was called the Coefficients, and it's somewhere in 1905 or 1906, one of the man who would later become the British Foreign Minister, Sir Edward Grey, laid out the plan that was to plunge the world into World War One, and of course Bertrand Russell was so upset about this that he resigned from the dinner club called the Coefficients. Now, he did, however, tell us who the members of the Coefficients were, and lo and behold, if you analyze the list, you find it was the members of the secret society that Cecil Rhodes had created in 1891 to bring about a world government. And you can read this about this in Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, History of the World in High Time, or the Anglo-American Establishment, get the membership, the list of all the people in the secret society. We actually have all the lists because we went through Professor Quigley's papers at Georgetown University after he died and got all of his notes and records, because I wanted to know if there really was a secret society out there that was manipulating the world, you know, starting at the beginning of the 20th century and of course carrying right up until I was there in 1980. And there's no question there is a secret society. Began with Cecil Rhodes in 1891, became the Association of Helpers, became the Round Table. In 1919, it became the Royal Institute for International Affairs, and in 1921, it became the Council on Foreign Relations, located at 5080 68th Street in New York. Of course, I've been there. I've been through their files, many files nobody else has ever been through, and found out they were planning all of the wars that followed. Why? Because the plan has always been to create a one-world government, a one-world financial system, to create a one-world religion, to destroy Christianity and install a one-world ruler. And you can read their papers, you can read their articles, you go through certainly their headquarters, and no question, that's what they were formed for, was to bring about this one-world government. When you understand that these people, this small little clique, which is a front for a secret society, has controlled our government largely since 1921. And their goal is world government. You can understand that they're using the military and financial power of the United States to accomplish that goal, which is why we have our troops stationed in 130 nations, why we have 800 to 900 military bases throughout the world. This is not to defend America. This is not to bring freedom to the world. This is to bring about an authoritarian world system controlled by a ruling elite, but you can't let the foolish American people know that. Well, let's go back, of course, then to Sydney. We know that Sydney from Bertrand Russell, they were planning on World War One beginning back in about 1905 and 1906. Then, of course, we have just released a new DVD, and it is an interview I did with Norman Dodd in 1980, and we've just released it now, of course, with an update, and if you get it, you'll have to hear me talk for about 45 minutes. As I tell you what I've learned in the last 50 years, but it's really a very important document, because Norman Dodd was the director of research for the Reese Committee. and the Reese Committee was appointed by Congress in 1953 to investigate the great tax-exempt foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and find out why they were financing subversive activities throughout the world, why they were bringing communism to country after country, why they'd been instrumental in turning Eastern Europe and China over to the communists. In 1953, everybody thought there's got to be communists working in our government. Why else would the State Department have brought, you know, communism to Eastern Europe and to China? Because those were the days of McCarthyism. And they attributed it to communism, but they didn't understand the communist movement has been financed from its inception by wealthy people in the United States who wanted an enemy to draw the attention of the American people away from the fact that this whole subversive movement to bring about world government had been financed from here, from the United States, and that basically, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations controlled the American State Department in 1953 and 1954, and they were using, of course, the wealth of our nation at that time to bring about this one world government. Well, of course, Norman Dodd gives a wonderful interview. You'll actually hear this on the DVD. It's called The Dangerous Deception, and he tells us two things. Well, a number of things, really, but the two outstanding things is that Rowan Gaither, the president of the Ford Foundation, told Mr. Dodd personally that the purpose of the Ford Foundation was to so alter life in America that one day it could be peacefully merged with the Soviet Union. And, of course, the whole idea was that they were operating under a presidential directive. This is what Rowan Gaither, president of the Ford Foundation, told Norman Dodd. He told me, and you can see it on the DVD. The other thing was that Mr. Dodd had research facilities at his disposal. He had written to the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, asking to see some of their records, and they offered to let him send one of his representatives to go through all of the minutes of the meetings that had going all the way back to 1908. So Mr. Dodd sent one of his assistants, Miss Catherine Casey, to go through the minutes of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And what did she find? Well, she had an opportunity to read those minutes. She found that they spent the entire year, 1908 to 1909, meeting regularly, and this was before the Carnegie Endowment was actually incorporated as an organization. But they had regular meetings, and of course they discussed how will they bring about world peace. They decided the way to bring about world peace was through war. There is no better way to change society than through war. So after a year, they decided what they needed was a series of war. Then they spent 1909 to 1910 determining how they would get America into these wars. And you can actually hear my interview with Norman Dodd, where he tells this story in our new DVD, The Dangerous Deception. And, of course, we have, if you get a syllabus we have called Iraq, the Untold Story, you'll see all sorts of other documentation publications in 1909, 1910, talking about the necessity to go to war to bring about the United Nations. They were planning on the war in 1909, 1910, and so the war started in 1914, but it was all contrived. And certainly, they sank the Lusitania, hoping to bring America into the war. The State Department kept telling people it was perfectly safe to go on the ship or to travel to Europe, even though the Germans kept running ads in the local newspapers in New York saying, do not go on the Lusitania, it's going to be sunk. And the American State Department told passengers who inquired, nothing to worry about, you're completely safe on the Lusitania, hoping the ship would go down and a lot of Americans would be killed and then that would be used as a vehicle to get us into World War One. Well, fortunately, that happened in 1915. The American people didn't want to go to war in 1915, any more than they wanted to go to war in December 6, 1941. But they were manipulated into the war. They were manipulated into the First World War by the something called the Zimmerman Letter. Most Americans never heard of the Zimmerman Letter, but we'd been subjected to all sorts of propaganda, all sorts of lies and deception by the media, which at that time was totally controlled by what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. We include in our syllabus an article out of the Congressional Record in February of 1973, which tells how a small group of people headed by J.P. Morgan, who incidentally was very, very close to the secret society that Cecil Rhodes had created in 1891. But J.P. Morgan, of course, had put out a great deal of money to buy up the editorial policy of the major newspapers in America and use them to propagandize us about all the terrible atrocity stories. They love atrocity stories, and they told the atrocity stories about how the wicked Germans were cutting off the hands of little Belgian boys and cutting off the breasts of Belgian women and raping and ravishing them. It was all a lie. But the gullible American people believed the stories about the German atrocities, just like they believed the stories that were being told today about how terrible the Iranians are and how they threaten America and threaten world peace. It's all propaganda. But you could convince people that they should go to war, and that's exactly what they did. And then, of course, when the Zimmerman Letter was published, and most people don't even know what the Zimmerman Letter was, but it was supposedly written by the German foreign minister, a man named Zimmerman. It was supposedly written to the British ambassador to Mexico saying, if war should come between Germany and the United States, why, we want you to convince Mexico that they should attack the United States. Well, you know, if the letter was real, when it was brought out and Zimmerman was asked, did you write the letter, he would have denied it. He would have lied because he knew it would bring America into the war. But instead, supposedly, the letter was intercepted by British intelligence. Mr. Zimmerman, the foreign minister of Germany, was asked, did you write the letter? And he said, oh, sure, I wrote the letter. And he didn't say, I hope America comes into the war, but he knew it was going to bring America into the war. I think Zimmerman, as so often is the case, was a plant part of this whole movement. Anyway, he admitted Germany that he had written the letter, and that was used to manipulate America into the World War One. The war would have ended early in 1917. Everyone was exhausted, you know. There were millions of soldiers had been killed. Millions of civilians were killed. And we managed to prolong the war for another 1.5 bloody years to kill 125,000 Americans for no reason at all, and to cripple tens of hundreds of thousands of others. When the war ended, there were 21 million people dead, 40 million people wounded. And, of course, they destroyed the Russian Empire, the Turkish Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the German Empire. They had weakened tremendously the British Empire. But you see, there's no better way to change the world than to war. It was a totally unnecessary war. But it was all fought for this idea of bringing about a world government, and the world government that was to be the League of Nations, and everybody was going to join in. Nations would give up their sovereignty. We could never have another bloody war like that one. But the American Senate didn't go along with it. And so that made sure that World War II would come. Now, the story of World War II has never been well told. Most Americans do not really understand what happened at that time. All these stories. Go ahead.
Dr. Sayin, may I interrupt just for a moment? Before you leave World War One, would you tell us a little bit what you told us on an earlier program on the network about the White Russians and the Russian Revolution? I think it's important to bring that out, too.
Well, of course, there came, you know, certainly in 1917, there was a Russian Revolution, and this was actually financed in Moscow by a man named Lord Milner. Who was Lord Milner? He was the assistant to Cecil Rhodes, one of the four original members of the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891. And by 1917, why, Lord Milner was the second most powerful man in England, second only to Lord George, who was the premier, the second most powerful man, was, of course, Lord Milner. Lord George had a secretariat made up of five advisors. Three of them came from Cecil Rhodes' secret society. They weren't more than 20 or 30 members at the time, but they were in all the key positions. And Milner, you can read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or read the biography of the English ambassador to Moscow at that time, and you'll find that there is no question at all that Lord Milner financed the first Russian Revolution. That was in March of 1917. And, of course, the white Russians opposed the communists and taken control of the government. And certainly if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll find out how certainly the British betrayed the white Russians. They made sure that they could not get weapons, they could not get the equipment that they needed to oppose the Russians, the Red Russians, because, of course, this small conspiracy, and it was a conspiracy, wanted the communists to take over in Russia. And they undercut the opposition, they undercut the anti-communists at every turn. And we give you the documentation for the background of how certainly initially they backed the white Russians, then they undercut the white Russians. They put an embargo on them so they couldn't get weapons anywhere in the world, and then they forced them to leave so that the communists could take control, so that we would have an enemy. We always create the best enemy money could buy, which of course takes us then over into World War II. And this is the part of the story which almost no one knows. And that is the fact that when Adolf Hitler came to power in 1933, Germany was bankrupt. The military was poorly trained, didn't have adequate military equipment, and there was no way that you were going to be able to get a war going. And so 100 American corporations moved to Germany, and we're talking about General Motors, General Electric, Ford Motor Company, AT&T, IBM, Exxon, many of our major banks, including Brown Brothers Harriman, who supported it, was actually one of the major people in Brown Brothers Harriman at the time, was a man named Prescott Bush, grandfather of George Herbert Walker Bush, but father of George Herbert Walker Bush and grandfather of George W. Bush. Following the Second World War, I should simply mention that Brown Brothers Harriman and Prescott Bush were indicted for treason for their financial aid to Adolf Hitler. But getting ahead of the story, 100 major American corporations moved to Germany and started building the weapons for Germany so they could have a war. And they not only built the weapons for the German military before the war, they built them all during the war. And General Motors and General Electric and Ford and AT&T and IBM and all the others built the weapons all during the war, headed by Americans who were there. We have, and you can get a free copy from us if you'd like, a letter which I found among Colonel House's papers at George, that might be at Yale University at the Sterling Library, a letter that had been actually written by William Dodd, the American ambassador to Germany. Ambassador Dodd writes a letter to Colonel House and says, Colonel House, why are 100 American corporations over here building weapons for the Nazis? This is 1936, he writes the letter. You know, first of all, Nobody over here wants another war. We just got through a terrible war. Why are the American corporations building the weapons? There's no profit to be made. They're exchange controls. They can't get any money out of the country. The stockholders of these companies understand that American corporations are building the weapons, and they're not going to make a profit on them. Well, William Dodd didn't understand that this whole thing was contrived. The corporations were in on it. They were all tied into the Council on Foreign Relations. They had to build up the enemy. We had to build up the German military. So in 1936, why we were building the weapons by 1938, why, of course, the German military was strong enough to go into the... by 1936 was the year they actually went into the Rhineland. 1938, they invaded Austria and the Sudetenland. If you read the military analysis by the German generals, none of them wanted to go to war. They weren't strong enough. But if you read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and remember, he was a liberal college professor who taught at Harvard and Princeton, and then he went to Georgetown University, where, of course, he was for the rest of his life. But he was the one who discovered the Cecil, the secret society that Cecil Rhodes had found and had created, and he wrote about it in a couple of books. The first one was The Anglo-American Establishment. That's The Anglo-American Establishment. He completed the book in 1949. How did he know about the secret society? One of the members of the secret society told him about it, Professor Alvin Zimmern, who had been a member of the secret society, had become disillusioned, told Professor Quigley about it with a promise that Professor Quigley would never name his informant, which he never did, but I happen to know who he was because I have all the letters between Zimmern and Professor Quigley. I got those when I went to Georgetown University in 1980 and went through Professor Quigley's papers. So Quigley knew a member of the secret society who told him all about it and said it was still operating in the early 1940s. Well, we know it's continued operating since then because other people have come forward and told us, members of the secret society, because it could cost you your life, but of course, most of them, well, I'm sure they have killed people who revealed too much. But under any circumstances, why, of course, the secret society was there, and it was working to build up Adolf Hitler. In fact, that was the reason Professor Zimmern left the secret society, was because by 1921 they decided, after fighting this horrible and bloody war that they had created against the Kaiser and Austria, why they decided that they had been allied with France against Germany and Austria-Hungary, now they were going to switch sides after the war and support the Germans. And Alfred Zimmer thought that was a terrible, immoral thing to do. So he left the secret society, but that's what they did. They started working to finance and build up Germany in preparation for the coming war. You have to have an enemy. This is how it all works. And so they did. And if you read Professor Quigley, he will tell you how the British secret society, they called it the Cliveden Set, but it was really Cecil Rhodes secret society, how they encouraged Adolf Hitler at every turn. This is a very important book, Tragedy and Hope. It was suppressed for many years. Professor Quigley's first book, The Anglo-American Establishment, was actually suppressed for 32 years. He could never get it published while he was alive. It was later published in 1981 by a man. I tracked him down. He was afraid to come to my radio programs and talk about it because, of course, it could have cost him his life. And why I'm still here, I don't know, but God has preserved me, and so we continue talking as long as we can, trying to get people to check out the facts and find I'm true. There really are secret societies out there, not one, not simply Cecil Rhodes secret society. It is simply one of a number of secret societies, all intent upon bringing about the one world government. But be that as it may, it was American corporations and their counterparts in England who built up the Germans so we could have a war. And, of course, are those American corporations were headed by Americans all during the war, who were arrested after the war for war crimes, and then they were all taken to a concentration camp and then quietly released and allowed to come home, because you could never let the American people realize that we built the weapons for the Nazis so they could kill American boys. And the weapons that were used, the IT&T Stuka dive bomber made by IT&T, the trucks, the tanks, the airplanes, largely built by American corporations that were over there, building the weapons that killed our boys in Normandy, building the weapons that killed our boys at the Battle of the Bulge, that actually American agents were working closely with the leading Germans, and I'm speaking specifically of a man named Alan Dulles, later to become the director of our CIA, Alan Dulles, who was instrumental in the assassination of President Kennedy. Alan Dulles, whose brother John Foster Dulles was Secretary of State during the Eisenhower administration, because they were both high officials in the and on the leadership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations. But Alan Dulles was over there working closely with Heinrich Himmler. And following the war, why, of course, some of the Nazi war criminals were brought to the United States to work in not only the space program, but creating new and dangerous and terrible biological diseases, which have been released on the American people and responsible for so much of the disease we have today, working on mind control programs, many of which have been implemented, which is why most people have no idea what's going on, or if they do, they really don't care. And then, of course, we know that between 10,000 and 50,000 vicious Nazi war criminals responsible for the Holocaust were actually allowed and aided in their escape to South America, where people like Martin Bormann and Heinrich Himmler, contrary to what you hear on the History Channel, remember the History Channel is just propaganda, but the truth is there's a great deal of evidence that Heinrich Himmler survived. There's no question Martin Bormann, the number two man, survived. A wonderful book called, and you can get this on the internet incidentally, it's called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, written by Paul Manning, who was very well known back in the during the Second World War. He was a CBS commentator, and of course he tracked down Martin Bormann there in South America. But he was allowed, he was helped to escape by the American CIA and by British intelligence and by a little cell in the Vatican, the Satanic cell. They helped the Nazis escape, and they ensured the fact that they were never tracked down by the Jews. In fact, have you ever wondered, if you're out there in the listening audience, why, if this what I've told you is true, and you can look it up on the internet, the Nazis were allowed to escape through the rat line, R-A-T line. The rat line, just as the ones that came to America came to Operation Paperclip. Operation Paperclip, and we cover a lot of this in a four-tape set we have called Operation Paperclip. And, of course, it's covered in a book we carry called The CIA Doctors, and another book written by our good friend Dennis Cuddy called The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan. But here you've got all these Nazis living in South America, and the Jews never bothered to track them down. They only can find two of them. One is Adolf Eichmann, the other is Klaus Barbie. And the Jews let all the rest of the Nazis live out their lives comfortably there. Why would that have happened? Well, very simply, because Nelson Rockefeller, who is very much involved in this, as the Rockefeller family and the elite always have been, Nelson Rockefeller gave the Jews a choice. He said, I'll tell you what, we will get the votes for you from the South American countries for Israel, and Israel can then, with the United Nations, and a vote in the United Nations can become a nation. But if we get you those votes, you will not go after the Nazi war criminals in South America. Or you can go after the Nazi war criminals, and we'll see you don't get the votes in the United Nations. Well, of course, the Jews and the Jewish leaders wanted actually the state of Israel more than they wanted retribution against the Nazis, and that's why the Jews and the war Jewish who were tracking down the Nazis never found anybody else in South America. Why they let them all off, and we make a big issue about finding one or two here. You must understand that the state, American State Department, was protecting the Nazis. There was congressional hearings recently that brought this all out. We actually have material on that, documentation, even from the New York Times. We have an article on that we make available to people, but we have some wonderful books. One of them is called America's Nazi Secret by John Loftus, who had a security clearance three levels above top secret. He had his job was to track down the Nazi war criminals. And he tracked them down, but he found that most of them were living in New Jersey. These were people who had actually killed 2 million Jews in Belarus. They were actually not Nazis. They were Nazi sympathizers. They were citizens of Belarus. They were brought to America under the auspices of the American State Department and allowed to live out their lives in comfortable jobs, comfortable conditions in New Jersey, and they're buried there. And this is covered in John Loftus's book, America's Nazi Secret, and his book, The Secret War Against the Jews, and a third book we carry called The Unholy Trinity. These books are so important. We have a series of interviews we have with John Loftus and a four CD set called The War Against the Jews. This is the history you're never going to get. Our leaders were working closely with the Nazis, and they protected them after the end of the Second World War, but you can't let the American people know that or know that American corporations were building the weapons that would kill our boys at the Battle of the Bulge, at the invasion in Normandy, because people would begin to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. They might begin to understand that during the Vietnam War, why the United States government was funding and financing Russia, that was funding and financing the North Vietnamese, that was funding and financing the Viet Cong that were killing our boys, and there was no reason for the Vietnam War. We could have ended it in 6 weeks. I was personally told that by William H. Sullivan. William H. Sullivan, the American ambassador to Laos at the time, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, personal friend of David Rockefeller, but Sullivan, I think, was an honest man. And I spent a morning with him at Columbia University in 1980, and he told me a lot of things fascinating, but apropos of this, he told me he never understood why we didn't win the Vietnam War. All we had to do was invade North Vietnam. We could have ended the war in 6 weeks. General Lew Walt, and incidentally we have a filmed interview with General Lew Walt, where he actually, he actually told me exactly the same thing. You can see that filmed interview with General Lewis Walt if you call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. General Walt was a 4-star Marine general. He was assistant commandant of the Marine Corps. He headed the I Corps division during the 1965-66 talk. He'd planned the defense of Quezon, and the Quezon, which was depicted in the American media as a defeat for America. America's Dien Bien Phu was actually a great triumph for America, but you never know that reading the controlled press in America. But General Lew Walt told me the same thing that Admiral Ambassador William H. Sullivan told me. We could have won the Vietnam War in 6 weeks by simply invading North Vietnam. We're never allowed to win the war. It was a phony war, and the average American doesn't understand. We financed the people who financed the Viet Cong that killed our boys. It was like World War II all over again, and I believe we're doing the same thing today. We simply are financing our enemies, this whole terrorist movement. I mean, who funds Al-Qaeda and the Taliban? Why the Pakistani ISI, Pakistani intelligence. And who funds the Pakistani intelligence? Why, your CIA. We have created the best enemy money could buy. And if you doubt that, Unfortunately, you can go up on the internet and you can simply go to your search engine and type in Sydney. ISI funds Al Qaeda and Taliban. You'll find out what I'm saying is true. And then, of course, then you can type in CIA funds ISI, and you'll find out that we are funding the people who are funding our enemies. It's sort of like recently Israel released 1,027 terrorists to get back one soldier. Israel released 1,027 terrorists to get back one soldier. At least 400 of the terrorists were murderers and mass murderers who had blood on their hands. Why would Israel release 1,027 terrorists to get back one soldier? Why, if you don't have terrorists, how could you have a war on terrorism? The war on terrorism is as phony as World War II was. An awful lot of people died in World War II as we built the enemies for the Germans that were used to kill American boys. So then we go into the background of the German aspect of world, part of the Japanese aspect of World War II. We know that the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months, and we wouldn't let them. I personally met and spent several weekends with General Albert Wedemeyer, and he personally told me that he was, of course, in charge of the American forces, in fact, all of the forces in China, both the Nationalist and American forces, during the last half of the Second World War. And he told me that, that they had intercepted the messages from Japan offering to surrender. After the first bomb was dropped, they offered to surrender. They've been trying to surrender for 6 months. We wouldn't let the Japanese surrender. They said that the invasion of Okinawa, the invasion of Iwo Jima, the dropping of the first bomb, and the dropping of the second bomb were totally unnecessary. And General Wedemeyer personally told me that he had intercepted the message from the Japanese pleading to be allowed to surrender after the first atomic bomb had been dropped, and we wouldn't let them, and then we dropped another bomb and killed another 125,000 Japanese. Totally unnecessary. This is criminal activity, and the people who were responsible should have been tried for treason, but of course they never are, because the American people have no idea what's really going on behind the scenes. So we could take you on into how they contrived the Korean War. It was another no-win war. Basically, if you read General MacArthur's reminiscences, you'll find that General Lin Piao, who headed the Chinese troops that crossed the Yalu and were used to kill the American troops, General Lin Piao said, I would never have risked my men and my military reputation and attacked the Americans if I had not been assured that Washington would restrain General MacArthur from retaliating against my forces, my lines of communication. I would never have risked my men and my military reputation if I had not been assured that Washington would restrain MacArthur. You get the book, Reminiscences, written by General MacArthur. He will tell you that he wasn't allowed to bomb or attack the communist supply depots where they had their weapons in North Korea. He wasn't allowed to bomb the plants where they generated electricity. He was not allowed to really try to win the war, to bomb the supply lines in Manchuria or the bridges coming across the Yalu. And, of course, where they were allowed to bomb, they were suicide missions. And as one of the pilots said to him, die. Very touching description there in the book. And the pilot looked at General MacArthur and said, whose side is Washington on? Whose side is Washington on? And General MacArthur writes in his book, he said, at that point I decided to resign my commission. Because, of course, the question was whose side was Washington on? They were sending our boys on suicide missions, and they knew that. And he said the only reason he did not resign was because his staff pleaded with him that that would totally demoralize the troops. And so he then set himself up to be a fire, and he started writing letters to congressmen being critical of the Truman administration because he knew they were betraying our men. And they were sending on suicide missions, just like this whole stupidity in Afghanistan and Iraq have been suicide missions because we're financing Al-Qaeda and Afghanistan, and nobody will tell the American people the truth about that this is a phony war, and this next war with Iran and the Muslim world will result in a class of civilizations that is going to kill hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people over there. But I fear there are going to be serious repercussions here in America, and I believe God is going to bring his judgment upon this nation. God always brings his judgment upon nations that have turned against him, and America has turned against God. And men and women, if you're out there in the listening audience, remember, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if you're not involved in this battle, trying to get the truth out, and you can get everything I've told you, most of this is, you'll find in a talk we have, a DVD called Iraq, the Untold Story, and a syllabus goes with that that'll show you the documentation. The documentation of the fact that the Japanese had tried over and over again to surrender, and we wouldn't let them because we wanted to slaughter as many as we could. And right along with that, the American boys who died in the invasion of Okinawa and Iwo Jima were sacrificed in a war that could have been over at least 6 months earlier. We wouldn't let them. And we could go on. I could tell you the story.
Dr. Sayin, we do want you to give your website again and your telephone number.
It's RadioLiberty.com. It's RadioLiberty.com. We hope you'll go there and get our material. I'm going to have to go, Phoebe, but please ask your people to go to RadioLiberty.com. They can listen to our programs there.
And
24
we
hours
must
a day.
We want to thank you. We want to thank you very, very much. How can we thank you enough? But your parting words there to the people, they do have a duty to stand up and oppose this evil, and they must not be afraid because our Lord will watch over us, I believe, much more faithfully. He's always faithful. But if we stand up instead of ignoring him and the truth, we thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. Good night. And all of you listeners out there, please go to Radio Liberty, 1-800-544-8927. Lou, this has been really historic to talk to Dr. Sammy Montee.
Yes, it has. And it just goes to show you've got to research these things. You can't believe what you read in the books in school.
No. And will you make your life count as Art Burncloud did? Because one day you will face our Maker. It won't matter how many thousands of secret societies are there. God holds the ultimate power over your soul. Good night.